Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome to the Karma You podcast. This is your host, Chloe Brotheridge. I'm a coach, a hypnotherapist, and I'm the author of The Anxiety Solution and Brave New Girl. And this podcast is all about helping you to become your calmest, happiest, and most confident self.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you're doing well wherever you are. I am talking to the lovely Rosamund Dean today. She's got a brand new book called Reconstruction. And it's all about her experience with breast cancer. Now, in this conversation, we talk about a lot of different things, from Rosamund's experience getting diagnosed at the age of 40. We talk about the anxiety around that and how it can affect you mentally and physically. We also talk about what the process of writing the book was like for her. And we talk about the things that helped her, both the physical practices and psychological processes and practices that helped her through that experience. We also get into the terminology and the ways that cancer is often described and how that can be quite unhelpful sometimes. And we dig into the topic of asking for help and, you know, how to ask for help when you're experiencing cancer. Now, this episode will be brilliant for anyone who may be going through breast cancer themselves, or any type of cancer indeed, or for someone that may be supporting someone with cancer, or maybe just wanting to educate yourself around this topic more, seeing as it is such a, you know, it's something that affects so many people. Now, as always, I'd love to invite you to find me on the internet, on my home on the internet at karmayou.com. The address is karma hyphen, that little dash in the middle, you, YOU.com. And you can find there free resources, like a free workbook for anxiety. I'm often running free workshops, so you'll find out about that. That'll be on my homepage if I'm running something soon. And all the podcasts and loads of blog posts are there as well for you. And if you don't already follow me on Instagram, I'd love to see you there. Let me know if you're listening. Let me know where you're listening. I'd love to hear where people are tuning in. Are you driving? Are you walking? You know, your baby in the pram? Let me know what you're up to. Come and find me on Instagram. I'm at Chloe Brotheridge. So we're going to get into the interview with Rosamund Dean. I hope you like it.
So welcome, Rosamund. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat to you today.
Yay, me too. This is my first podcast in a while. I went off on maternity leave and I'm recording this with you today, and I'm slightly nervous, and I'm hoping, you know, the tech's all going to work. But I loved reading your book. You've got this new book out called Reconstruction. Could you just share a bit about your history, I suppose, and how you came to then write this book?
Yeah, absolutely. Side note, welcome back from maternity leave. I know. It's a very kind of discombobulating time. It's like, I've forgotten how to type. I've forgotten how to do an email.
Yes.
You're back. So, yes. So, I was diagnosed with breast cancer in January 2021. So, just over 2 years ago now. And I'm a journalist. I started writing a column about my experience in the Sunday Times Style. And off the back of that, I just had so many messages, emails, DMs on social media from people kind of saying, thank you so much for sharing your experience, because it's really made me feel like I'm not alone. Because I think there are so many elements of cancer treatment that people don't necessarily talk about, or that you wouldn't know about until you're in the thick of it, experiencing it yourself. Because why would you learn about that stuff until you're kind of, you know, going through it? So that column ran for a year. And then at the end of that, I started writing the book. So the book is really kind of pulling together all the information that I wish I'd known throughout cancer treatment. So I had my diagnosis was quite aggressive. It was stage 3, grade 3, triple negative breast cancer. And it was multifocal, which means there's two separate tumors in the breast. And it was in the lymph nodes as well. So I basically had the works in terms of treatment. I had 5 months of chemotherapy, followed by a mastectomy surgery, was full axillary lymph node clearance. So that's taken out all of the lymph nodes under the right arm. I had radiotherapy, and then I had some further oral chemotherapy after that, which is when it's given after surgery, that's to reduce the risk of recurrence. So yeah, I went through the whole lot. And my editor, who I worked on the book with, had had breast cancer as well. And she had a totally different type of breast cancer, hormone receptor positive. So it was amazing to work really closely with her and the book to make sure we were kind of addressing what's important to everybody with breast cancer. For that reason, it was also important for me to speak to lots of different people with different experiences for the book, so we can cover everyone's experience. So it's everything that you need to know for treatment, and then also how to kind of put your life back together again afterwards, because you kind of think when you get to the end of cancer treatment, you will be delighted and relieved and like, yay, I can get on with my life now. And actually, you're left kind of shaken and a bit like, I don't know who I am anymore. It changes your whole identity.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I can really imagine this book being so helpful, not only for people who are going through breast cancer themselves, but also people supporting them. Or, you know, I know you talk in the beginning of the book about some of the stats around breast cancer and just how common it is. Is it 1 in 7?
Yeah,
women will experience it.
Yeah, 1 in 7 women will experience breast cancer. It's the most, I was going to say popular, it's a weird word. It's the most common kind of cancer in the UK and in America as well, I think. So yeah, it's about 57,000 new breast cancer cases in the UK every year. So that's, I think it's over 150 a day. So it works out about 1 every 10 minutes. It's crazy. So, and the numbers are going up as well, particularly for younger women. Although the good news is survival rates are also improving all the time. So new treatments are coming out all the time. Treatments are improving. Diagnosis is improving. It's getting better and better in terms of survival, which is amazing news. But it does mean that there are a lot of us out there who have been through this and are kind of looking for guidance, how to live well afterwards.
And I was curious about what it was like for you to write this book. Was it triggering? Was it cathartic? Like, what was that process like?
It was definitely triggering.
Yeah.
there were definitely some points where I thought, or my husband would say, why have you done this? Is there a way you can not do this now? And I was like, I think that ship has sailed. I'm doing this now.
Yeah.
But when I was in the middle of writing it, I mean, that makes it sound like it's a difficult book to read. It's not. It's not a bleak account of depressing breast cancer story. It's very, you know, it's useful and practical and warm and reassuring. And I hope it will make you feel better after reading it rather than worse. But for me, I guess it was just, you know, for instance, writing the chapter about chemotherapy, I was really having to go back into that place of remembering how I felt during chemo and the things that helped me, and just how it felt to have lost my hair, and, you know, not just from your head, but also your eyelashes and eyebrows. And there's so many weird chemo things that you don't know about until they happen. Like, your skin is really sensitive. You have to do these injections in between cycles of chemo to kind of boost your neutrophils, your white blood cells, so that you're kind of healthy enough for chemo. There were just so many things about it I'd almost kind of blocked out. And then when I started writing it, it kind of came back. So it was definitely hard to relive all of that stuff, but I think it was cathartic because it helped afterwards. I was so glad I'd done it. I felt a lot better.
Yeah, so worth it for all the people that are going to be, you know, benefiting from this book.
And I hope so.
Yeah. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the anxiety and the fear. You know, this podcast is, you know, quite centered around, you know, people with anxiety. And I think, you know, not only do people maybe fear getting cancer, but obviously there's obviously so much fear that surrounds, you know, the scan. We hear about scanxiety and reoccurrence and that sort of thing. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, this was something that really was a bit of a shock for me because when I was first diagnosed, I was definitely scared of cancer and I was dreading the treatment and I knew how brutal it would be. But funnily enough, I didn't think about dying at all at that point. I thought breast cancer, you know, this is something that's totally survivable. I knew the survival rates were high. I've worked in women's magazines for years. I worked on so many features about breast cancer. I know I thought of it as something that was very, very survivable. And it was only really, I think, first of all, one of the things that made it, that changed the way that I thought about it was while I was going through treatment, there were several high profile cases of women dying from secondary breast cancer. And it kind of dawned on me how badly this could go, how it could turn out. And then I learned more about my particular diagnosis. Triple negative breast cancer has traditionally had a much worse prognosis and much worse outcome and much higher risk of recurrence than other types of breast cancer. So I learned more about that, which is quite scary. And then after I'd finished all of my treatment, I really thought there would be a point where the oncologist or the surgeon would say to me, right, that's it now. You've got the all clear. You're free to go. You're cancer free. Your life can carry on as normal. And there is no point where that happens. There's no such thing as the all clear. They kind of say, see you in 3 months. And I still have to go back every 3 months for appointments. And I'm not sure how long that goes on for, but I know that when I left hospital after the appointment where I thought I would kind of be signed off from the whole cancer world, I just felt like this sense of dread that it could come back. And there was no doctor will ever say to you, you've got the all clear or you're cancer free, because they just don't know. There's no way of knowing unless you had an MRI yesterday. And even then, a tumor has to be a certain size to be seen on an MRI anyway. There's kind of, you can easily work yourself up into overthinking every kind of lump or bump or ache or pain or twinge. So just to explain, if my cancer does recur, it won't be in the other breast as a lump, which is how I discovered the initial cancer as a breast lump. It will be elsewhere in my body. So it will have spread and become secondary breast cancer, which is the one that you die from. And they said the places that it's most likely to spread and recur in are lungs, liver, bones, and brain. So I said to the surgeon, so what kind of thing should I be looking out for? Like, what are the signs of recurrence? And she was like, well, you know, if it's in your bones, then it could be back pain, shoulder pain, neck pain. There are some lymph nodes there. If it's in your brain, it's just like headaches. In your lungs, it could be a cough. In your liver, there aren't really so many symptoms of that. Maybe fatigue. I was like, what? You just listed a bunch of things that I, and probably a lot of people, feel every day. Like, oh, a bit of back pain. Oh, I've got a headache. Oh, I'm a bit tired.
Right.
So it's the symptoms that I'm meant to be looking out for that could mean that I'm going to die soon are just things that everybody feels every day. And also they're things that are exacerbated by anxiety. So, you know, if you have pain in your back or shoulder and you start dwelling on it and being like, oh God, my shoulder, could that be cancer recurrence? If it is, you know, how do I tell the kids? How do I, well, like, you can really work yourself up into a frenzy, as I have done several times. Yeah, that has been the hardest thing by far, I would say. Coping with that has been harder than the cancer treatment, harder than the initial diagnosis. That realization when treatment was over, that it was kind of not over. There was always going to be this chance that it could come back. That took a lot of processing and a lot of getting my head around.
Yeah. Yeah, because I guess obviously it's a physical, like, illness, and yet the mental side of it, you know, is, yeah, sounds like what you're saying, like the harder part of it, the kind of the anxiety and fear around it.
I should say at this point, actually, that every case of breast cancer is different and every diagnosis has different risk factors. And with some breast cancers, you can have successful treatment for a primary breast cancer and the chance of it coming back is extremely low. They have this, the NHS use this tool online where you can put in your diagnosis and the treatment you had, and it gives you your kind of, it's quite brutal. They give you your percentage chance of death in the next 5 years, the next 10 years, the next 15 years. With lots of breast cancers, it's really, really low. And nobody has 100% chance of surviving the next 5 years anyway, because you might be hit by a bus. So
yeah,
for a lot of people, the chance of recurrence is very low. I think because in my case, it was triple negative. I didn't have a complete response to chemo, which means that there was still some cancer present when they did surgery after the 5 months of chemo. So that increases my risk as well. So the surgeon told me my risk was about 40% chance of recurrence, which is quite high, but it's not that high for most people. So just want to say that word of reassurance.
That's interesting to know. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I guess I was wondering about, like, what were the things that helped you? And I know in the book you outline different kind of health strategies, whether that's, you know, with the aim of reducing the risk of recurrence, or I think you call it, I don't know if you call it complementary therapies or integrative therapies that go alongside the sort of treatments that are maybe designed to help you with the anxiety around it. And what were the things that you found helpful that you did during that process?
So one of the things that really helped me is, so if you have any new ache or pain that you fear could be a sign of recurrence, the official advice is not to worry about it until it's been persisting for at least 2 weeks. After that, only after that point should you go and get it checked out. So what I do now, if I get a headache or a pain in my back or my shoulder, or if I have any kind of symptom that I think could be recurrence, then I set a reminder in my phone for 2 weeks. And just the act of writing it down, doing a reminder that I know is going to ping on that day, it just kind of tells my brain that I don't need to think about it again until that day that the reminder pings.
That's such a good one.
It almost, I think giving your brain permission to forget about it just makes it go away most of the time. And if, you know, if when that reminder pings, it still hurts, then you can go and get it. It will still almost definitely be nothing. But then you can go and get it checked out and you can say to your doctor, I've been having this symptom for 2 weeks, and you will know it's been exactly 2 weeks. Because before I decided to start doing that, I would get pain in my shoulder. I would obsess over it. I'd wake up in the morning and be like, is it still hurting? Oh, yeah, it is. Oh, how long has it been now? I'm not sure. And it just kind of knocks that whole spiral on the head.
This episode is sponsored by the Hypnotherapy Collection. So you might have heard me talk about how I first discovered hypnotherapy about 12 years ago now, and how it was the one thing that could cut through my anxiety and low self-esteem and actually create a shift. For you, you might have read the self-help books, been to the workshops, had the therapy, but nothing seems to stick. Or you try out that new meditation, routine, or mindset technique, and it seems to work for a bit, but you soon find yourself frustrated and back at square one. If change feels hard, I want you to know that it's not your fault. When you realize that 95% of your thoughts, feelings, and habits come from your unconscious programming, it all starts to make sense. So if you're struggling with things like never feeling good enough, being unable to switch off, relax, and enjoy the moment, if you struggle with setting boundaries, with burnout, or with your confidence, I have just the thing for you. Enter the Hypnotherapy Collection. Hypnotherapy allows us to address things at that deep, unconscious level so that we can make shifts. And by the way, if you haven't tried hypnotherapy before, it's basically one of the most relaxing things you can do, kind of like a massage or a holiday for your brain, where you lie down in your bed or your sofa, close your eyes and let the hypnotherapy do the work for you. What could be better than that? In the Hypnotherapy Collection, you'll get 12 of my most powerful hypnotherapy sessions that help you with things like letting go of the things that you want to let go of, increasing your self-love and self-worth, sleeping better and more deeply, boosting your energy and motivation, feeling more positive, healing shame, and healing the inner child, plus loads more. And you also get some bonuses. I popped in there 4 bonus affirmation recordings to help you to change your self-talk, feel more positive, improve your confidence, and reduce your anxiety. These recordings are the perfect thing to listen to after work, to switch off from the day, before bed, to help you to sleep better, first thing in the morning to set yourself up for the day. Or if you wake up in the night, they're a brilliant thing to listen to then as well. When you download them, you get to keep them forever and return to them whenever you need to. So you can head over to my website, karma-u.com/collection, to grab them now and start feeling better from the first listen. And use the code podcast at checkout to save 20%. That's podcast, all in capital letters. To save 20%, head over to karma-u.com/collection.
Yeah, I love that. And it's similar to something that I do, obviously not in the same circumstances, but generally I kind of document things. So if like the baby's sleeping, like waking up more, if I write it down, I know that it's written down and then I know the dates and I can see, hang on, this only lasted for 3 days. Or like if something's happening with my cycle where I'm feeling more moody, I document it and write it down, and then you can kind of have a record of how things change and how they disappear and how get better. And yeah, I love that idea of just kind of getting it out, and then you don't have to think about it. You kind of set in that system to sort of check in with yourself after a couple of weeks and see how you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And if you do go and see a doctor about something, they will always say, how long have you been having this for? And so I think it's really good to write things like that down.
Yeah. Anything else that you do that is helpful or have done?
So another thing that really helps, I spoke to a breathwork expert for the book. And one of the things he said you can do if you're having kind of spiraling thoughts, and you're, first of all, you have to become aware of them, because often your thoughts can spiral and you don't even realize it's happening. You're just working yourself up into a frenzy and you can't even see it. So you have to kind of take the time to acknowledge your thoughts. And then if you wake up at 3 a.m. having a panic that you've got breast cancer recurrence somewhere in your body and you're going to die, and what are your kids going to do? And that's, I feel like it, those thoughts can just really, really escalate. It's just a case of taking a pause, taking a moment, focusing on your breathing, and then sort of saying to yourself, aside from my thoughts, am I okay right now? And the answer is almost always yes. Like in the here and now, you're fine. It's kind of remembering to take that time to kind of calm your mind and just check in with yourself how you are right now. And actually, aside from your spiraling thoughts, you're fine.
That's really powerful, I think, because so much of anxiety, it's about things in the future that could happen or might happen, or a fear might happen. Yeah. And actually just coming back to the breath, coming back to the here and now and recognizing, like, right now you're okay. It's very grounding, I think, to do that. And yeah, I can definitely imagine, yeah, when your thoughts are spiraling, just to come back to that being really useful.
Yeah, and that's really helped me as well with just kind of after cancer treatment, having almost like flashbacks to the grimmest moments. And for me, one of the most difficult bits was surgery, because it was during the COVID pandemic, so I wasn't allowed to have any visitors in the hospital. You know, my husband, my kids, I couldn't see them. And I was in hospital for a week because it was quite major surgery, because I had a type of surgery called Dieppe flap reconstruction, where, this is quite amazing, where they take flesh from your tummy and use it and move up to your chest to kind of build your breast out of your own flesh. So you don't have to have nice. An implant. So you can have your breast reconstructed without having to have an implant. But it's so incredible what they can do. And I feel very, you know, very lucky and grateful to have been able to have life-saving treatment and amazing cutting-edge surgery. And we're so lucky with the NHS. I definitely don't want to sound ungrateful. It is amazing. But that was a bleak week in hospital. Mm. It was just very, very grim. You know, the operation was 10 hours. I had all these awful hallucinations when I came around afterwards. I had like a cannula in my hand, one in my foot, like drains hanging out of my body. Mm. It was just, it was so bleak. And after that experience, I did get flashbacks and bad dreams, and I kept kind of going back there in my mind. So just really, really simple things like focusing on your breathing and reminding yourself that right now you're okay just makes such a big difference.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. One thing you talk about in the book, and it's about the language around cancer and the kind of the, you know, it's a battle, or, you know, people are being really brave. I think Toral Shah as well. She's a friend of mine, and she, you know, says, don't say that people are brave, because they're not choosing to be brave. No one, you know, not doing it on purpose. They have to be brave. So it's not like you shouldn't say that about people. But are there, yeah, could you say a bit about the kind of the language, and how, if there a better way to think about it than it being like a battle, for example?
Yeah. I mean, I do feel like there are so many things that people say that can inadvertently make you feel worse. And it's, obviously, people are just trying to help, and they don't always know what to say, and they're trying to make you feel better. I'm sure in the past I have also said things to people that were not the appropriate thing at the appropriate time. And I definitely don't blame anyone for doing that. But you're right, the language around cancer can be a bit, if somebody tells you you're brave, first of all, it doesn't feel like you're brave when you're certainly not choosing to be going through that. And also when you just don't feel brave, when you feel like, I'd definitely rather not be doing this. But then you have that, you kind of have, on top of feeling scared.
No, sorry, I'm crying.
Yeah, on top of feeling scared, the idea that people think you're being brave, so you kind of have to almost put on an act of being brave. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Have a pause. Sorry, just have a break if you need.
Yeah. It's like therapy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I suppose the other one is stay positive, because it's true. It's good to stay positive. It's not bad advice. It's good to go into cancer treatment with a positive attitude and think, you know, I'm getting the best treatment. I'm going to be cured. You know, go into that with a really positive attitude can only help you. But then if someone says to you, stay positive, then it can make you feel kind of like a failure if you don't feel positive, or even, you know, if you have those moments when you feel negative, or even just don't feel 100% positive all the time, which is obviously not going to be the case during cancer treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think people feel like they're trying to make you feel better, or they're trying to be supportive, and that's really nice. But yeah, sometimes it can feel like, oh, I'm not brave, that I'm not being positive.
Yeah. Another thing I think.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You talk about in the book is the kind of, oh, you've got to make the most of every day now. You've got to make the most of every moment. And that's like such a lot of pressure, isn't it? It's like,
yeah.
If you're not making the most of it, it's a huge amount of pressure, people saying that. Or, yeah, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, I've definitely, I can kind of experience that from both sides, because I think since cancer treatment, I'm more capable of appreciating the small things. You know, people always say the small things are the big things, and, you know, it's the little things in life that mean the most. And it's kind of a cliche, and it's kind of, you know, but like, I think I've always been a bit like, what does that mean really? And now I do feel a bit more like I had a disease that could have killed me were it not for the medical advances that saved my life. And because of that, I can be on this school run with my kids. Or I can, you know, be drinking this coffee or whatever. So you can, I feel like I am more capable of appreciating small things now. But at the same time, doesn't mean that you appreciate every moment of your life. There are still, you know, you still get out of bed and stub your toe or get a speeding ticket get stressed out about a deadline or get annoyed with the kids or whatever it is. I feel like, if you try and live your life appreciating every moment, that is just a recipe for setting yourself up for failure, because nobody can.
Yeah, definitely. I know that a lot of people listening to this podcast, well, people with anxiety or people that struggle with, you know, things like people pleasing, find it really hard to ask for help. Mm-hmm. And I wondered about, you know, obviously when you're going through treatment for cancer, you're probably going to need help at certain times.
Yeah.
Like, did you ever find it hard to ask for help, or did you have any suggestions on, you know, for people that find it difficult to ask for help and how to approach that?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely hard. I mean, like a lot of people, like a lot of women, I was very used to always doing everything for myself and never asking for help and being proud of being kind of independent and in control of everything. But I think I was very lucky to have Jonathan, my husband. Also, this was during the COVID pandemic. Schools were closed. He was homeschooling both of our kids.
Wow.
While I was like, you know, crying on the sofa about my hair falling out. Like, he really bore the brunt of a lot of what was going on then. And also he set up separate WhatsApp groups that I wasn't in with local friends. At the time, I was a bit like, oh, this all seems to be going like clockwork. But I didn't know there were like all these conversations going on about who was going to take the kids on which day, so that he could drive me to chemo and bring me back again And yeah, like friends, local friends were amazing. I didn't have to ask anyone for help. People would like leave meals on the doorstep. Or one gift that's a really good gift for somebody going through cancer treatment is a voucher for one of those like healthy ready meal companies. A Cook voucher, or there are other companies do exist that do that as well. But yeah, that it was amazing when people sent things like that, because it just meant dinner was sorted, and there were lots of ways in which people helped me out without me having to ask, which was very nice. I think, yeah, I was very lucky in that regard to have a lot of support, and it was kind of just giving into it, I guess. I definitely had times where I would say to Jonathan, "Oh, I'm so sorry, you're doing everything, and this is not really hard for you." And he would always be like, "First of all, you're the one that's got cancer, so however hard it is for me, it's worse for you. And secondly, you'll probably be doing this for me one day. Let's face it." So, yeah, he was very, very pragmatic about it all.
Yeah, yeah. He sounds like a good one. He sounds like a good one. Yeah. What do you wish more people knew about breast cancer?
I guess that it's not one disease. It's lots of different diseases. I didn't know that there were different types of breast cancer. When the surgeon first said to me, "Your tumor is triple negative," and I was like, "What is that? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?" And he was like, "Well, it's not really a good or a bad thing. It's just a type of breast cancer." So obviously I went home and Googled it, and I saw that traditionally, at least, it has been a very bad thing. I wish I'd known more about how treatments have developed over the years, because triple negative breast cancer diagnosis now is not what it was 10 years ago. It's not even what it was 2 years ago. When I was diagnosed, I didn't get immunotherapy because at that time, it wasn't yet available in the NHS, and now it is. So, and this immunotherapy drug that just got approved on the NHS last year reduces your risk of recurrence by 40%. Massive. So anyone listening to this who has heard me banging on about triple negative breast cancer and how scary it is, it's much, much better now, even in that time since I was diagnosed. So things are improving all the time, but it is a much more complicated picture than I initially thought when I thought breast cancer was breast cancer. So people with hormone receptor positive breast cancer will often be given a hormone treatment for 10 years after their initial cancer treatment of chemotherapy or surgery. So I don't have to have that because my cancer was not hormone receptor positive. But in some ways, that's great because it's massively reducing their risk of recurrence. But in other ways, that comes with its own side effects and difficulties. And there's just so much that I didn't know before my diagnosis.
So last question for you would be around the kind of the confidence aspect of things, because obviously it's like a big, as you said, like an identity change, a traumatic kind of experience to go through.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course that can have an impact on people's confidence, body changing. What would you say to someone who's, you know, maybe coming out the other side of breast cancer and is struggling with their confidence?
Well, first of all, I'd say it's totally understandable to be struggling. It's completely normal. I really struggled as well. And I think one of the things that happens at the end of treatment for breast cancer, if you're premenopausal at diagnosis, then breast cancer treatment will almost always make you postmenopausal. If you have the hormone receptor positive breast cancer, then the hormone treatment will stop your periods. In my case, it was chemotherapy that stopped my periods. So you have the menopause on top of everything else that comes with cancer treatment. Mm-hmm. And all that, you know, like fear and anxiety and loss of confidence and brain fog and all the things that come with menopause that you can't have HRT. Well, it's not recommended. I know some people choose to have HRT anyway because the side effects can be so brutal, the symptoms, I mean, of menopause. But it's not recommended. Even for someone like me whose cancer was not hormone receptor positive, they still don't recommend HRT in case if it comes, it could be the other type. So you're dealing with that on top of having been through this thing that has completely changed your appearance. So after chemo, lots of people put on a lot of weight as well during chemo, which is not a thing that's often talked about. I think people perceive chemo as something that kind of makes you lose weight. But now the anti-sickness drugs are so good, and they give you steroids as well, which just make you hungry all the time. So you kind of go sort of puffy as well. You just don't look anything like yourself. And then the surgery obviously has a massive effect on your body. If you have, whether you have one mastectomy or a double mastectomy, it's a huge change. I definitely felt a lot less body confident after breast cancer. So it's like a culmination of all those things, kind of coming face to face with your own mortality, taking away the aspects that kind of define your femininity in a way, you know, your hair, your fertility, your breasts. Like it's just a lot. And you kind of emerge from the other side, menopausal, and thinking, who even am I now? I feel like I've lost myself. And so that's one of the reasons why I wanted to write the book, because it is kind of, it's partly a guide for getting through treatment, but it's partly a guide for putting yourself back together again afterwards and kind of coming to terms with what you've been through. And it's also the loss of identity that comes with it. You kind of have to let go of the old you. I think lots of people talk about wanting to get the old them back after breast cancer treatment, but you kind of can't. You sort of have to let go of that person, and you almost have to go through a grieving process that, you know, saying goodbye to that person, and then you sort of start from ground zero to build yourself back up after breast cancer. And it can be a really amazing opportunity to say to yourself, right, what are my values? What's important to me? What do I want to spend my time doing? What do I not want to spend my time doing? Like, who are the people that I want in my life and the people that I don't? You can actually build a life that is more authentic and more true to yourself. And you might find that you like yourself better afterwards.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you have a section in the book where you're, you know, guiding people through that process of thinking about what's important and values and that sort of thing. It's, yeah, some great questions and things to consider there. And yeah, I guess sometimes, yeah, when something really shakes us up in life, it is that opportunity to reassess things and think about what's really important and what we want to let go of. Yeah. And I just think as well, like, such a huge part of like anxiety or loss of confidence, and obviously experience of having cancer, that a really hard part of it is feeling like you're alone. And just what you're writing about in the book and sharing, you know, the ins and outs and the details and the emotions and the things that we don't maybe normally see from, you know, seeing someone, you know, a celebrity that we read about who had breast cancer or something, actually being able to see that behind the scenes. Yeah, I can just imagine that that would be very kind of validating and supportive for, you know, whoever's going through that.
Yeah, I did. One of the things that I found hardest after treatment when I was dealing with this fear of recurrence is the feeling of like, what's wrong with me? I've survived cancer. Now I should be happy. Why am I finding it so hard now? And it was through talking to other women who've had breast cancer and sharing experiences that I realized I'm far from alone. It's really, really common that people can struggle more after treatment and find it really difficult to talk to those closest to them, because, you know, your friends and family love you and it's really hard for them to see you go through cancer treatment. So obviously they want you to be better so that they can feel better. You know, they don't, if they see that you've been through it all and you've survived it and now you're not happy, they're kind of like, what? Like, what's going on? They don't, of course they can't understand. It's very difficult for them to understand. So that's why it's really good to have a community of people, or even just one other person you know that's been through it as well that you can talk to.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for everything you've shared. Can you tell us where, you know, people can find out about you and buy your book and all that sort of thing.
Oh, so the book is Reconstruction, How to Rebuild Your Body, Mind and Life After a Breast Cancer Diagnosis. It's available all good bookshops. I'm on Instagram at Rosamund Dean.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Chloe.
You have been listening to the Karma You podcast with me, Chloe Bretheridge. Don't forget, you can download loads of freebies for anxiety and confidence at my website, karmayou.com. You can also find out about my app and my one-on-one sessions. Please do subscribe to this podcast in the Apple Podcast app. And if you have enjoyed it or found it helpful, please leave me a review. It makes a massive difference to helping the podcast get discovered by other people. And come on over and find me on Instagram. I'm hanging out there every day. You can find me at Chloe Bretheridge. Let me know what you thought of this episode. And please do share it with anyone who might need to hear this today. So I'm sending you loads of love and I hope you have a brilliant week ahead.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.